Liberty Talk Live.
Welcome to Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, the founder of the Liberty Conspiracy, and we start things tonight with some thoughts on Earth Day. I want to go back to the segments we offer to the audience live on Liberty Conspiracy, which can be heard Monday through Friday at 6 o'clock on Rumble, Rockfin, and now on YouTube and my X, which is at Gard Goldsmith. So we're going to go back in time to Earth Day, look at its origins, some of the fallacies behind it, and some of the really obnoxious, pernicious, anti-freedom, and of course, if you're a fan of the Constitution, unconstitutional moves of the federal government just over the past few years, but of course, always stemming from various strains of philosophy that can actually be traced all the way back to Plato. Thanks for listening, everybody. Let's dig in. Hey, let's get rolling, everybody, with you know what? It's time for the big story!
The big story! The big story! The big story!
The big story!
This would not have passed without Donald Trump.
But oh, it's too hot, too hot, lady. I gotta run for shelter, gotta run for shade. It's too hot, too hot, too hot, lady. Gotta cool this anger, what a mess we have made. So long ago, you were my love, oh my love.
Oh, that sounds so good, doesn't it? I like that. On a nice afternoon, you know, you get to hear a little Cool in the Gang, and it makes you feel that much cooler. All right. Well, this is, of course, Earth Day, so we have to celebrate, dance to the music. And we start off with Cool in the Gang telling us a little bit about Earth Day. So what shall I do for you for this first presentation of tonight's Liberty Conspiracy extravaganza? What has the staff put together for us? Well, of course, since I take only commands from my Russian overlords, it's time for us to talk about criticism of Joe Biden on Earth Day. Hooray! Yay! Oh, this is great. Earth Day 2024. Biden announces a $7 billion solar energy grant package, not going to Ukraine, however. I know you must be very disappointed. I know. And 2,000 member Climate Corps jobs. Yes, we heard that that was coming. I got to mention that last year for MRC TV, the Climate Corps, but the new $7 billion in federal grants, I just don't know. I can't keep up. It's amazing. Here it is, April 22nd. Oh boy, President Joe Biden on Monday announced a $7 billion federal grant package that will supply more than 900,000 low and moderate income homes. Now, how do they measure low and moderate income homes? Just want to give you a quick reminder, when it comes to the earned income tax credit, when Barack Obama was going into his second term, I believe, I remember Gene Shaheen was running for Senate. It was around that time that they redefined poor. Yeah, the new definition of poor were people on the lower margins of what were termed middle income earners. And of course, the term class doesn't really apply in the United States because historically, the United States never had a feudal system or a caste system like India or like Europe did in the preceding. And so there isn't really any class. So it's just up to, of course, the definers of truth and words in government to tell us who are the lower class, who are the upper class, who are the middle class. And it just depends on what is politically expedient, right? Yes, let's turn their political frowns upside down and redefine another word here by the electric fire. All right. So it just depends. So, of course, they redefined it. And Barack Obama and the Democrat Jean Shaheen running for U.S. Senate from New Hampshire. And she's down there now. First time I ever spoke to her, she hung the phone up on me. Ha ha. Awesome. As you can tell, I'm a fairly, you know, pleasant guy. You think about the other side of that human coin and you've got Jean Shaheen. Believe me. Yes. Tails up. That's for sure. So she is tough to get along with. And I try to get along with everybody. So I even went and spoke to the teacher who threw me in a closet when I was in seventh grade and forgave her. So just keep in mind, that's how bad Jean Shaheen is. She hates me. So anyway, oh man, I'll have to go down and see if I can visit her office sometime. Put my feet up on the, you know, just act really obnoxious, just mildly obnoxious in the office. You know, like belch a lot and like blow bubbles and chewing gum, take the gum, put it on a chair and stuff, like open up a can of soda or whatever and like spill it, you know, what, I don't know. Just keep talking to the secretary, keep bugging them. Just become a real, like, mild nuisance. I'll be back. Keep coming back every few days. Sorry, I missed my appointment. Call by the wrong names. Like the secretary's name is Jill. You call her like Bill. Hey, Bill. What? Sorry. So anyway, so they redefined the so-called poor, the working poor. And then that allowed them to then say, we are going to expand the earned income tax credit to apply to people who are actually like, I don't know, whatever above what the old poverty line was. And then they claimed they were giving people a tax break. And Barack Obama said, I cut taxes. No, you didn't cut taxes. He didn't cut taxes. And Jean Shaheen said the same thing. I cut taxes for working Americans. Really? Yeah, sweetie. I certainly did, Brand Flake. Oh, you did? Yeah, it was in the form of the earned income tax credit. Oh, you mean that redistribution of wealth that is supposedly money that's taken from your paycheck tax for Social Security and Medicare, but you forward paid it and you still promised it to come in the future. So you're promising to double pay that earned income tax credit? Oh, yeah. That's not a tax break. That's a subsidy.
Well, sweetie, I mean, you know, they might die early. You know, what if they get, you know, a you-know-what in the shoulder or something like that? You know, Fanchini Ouchie. Well, he's, you know, he, you want to get your money early. You know what I'm saying, sweetie? Brand Flake? Lucky Charm?
Okay. Thank you, Barack. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's because when he was running for president, he was a senator, some reporter person in Michigan, she got really upset because he was surrounded by a bunch of people. And hey, I'm giving Barack some slack here, right? She got upset because she was trying to get a question and Barack was surrounded by all his fans in the press pool, you know, like, oh, Barack, I love you. I love you. I'm drooling. And she tried to get a question. And he goes, oh, hold on there. Just hold on there, sweetie. And she goes, well, this sweetie never got her question in. Ah! She got all irate, you know.
I can imagine, like, if you responded, don't get your panties in a bunch there, sweetie.
So I, as I mentioned a few weeks ago on the show, I used to do a live radio show here in New Hampshire. And we had this spurious phone call from a guy called B.O. And it was me recorded on the phone. And then we spliced it all together. And the phone thing sort of covers up the impression a little bit, makes it sound a little better and stuff. So it was Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah, it's me, Barack.
Like, oh, Senator Obama, how are you?
Well, I just want to apologize to that woman. I called her sweetie, but, it's a habit, sort of like, belching or passing gas. I do it a lot.
Like, oh, it's a term of endearment,
like belching or passing gas. Oh, okay. And he goes, just a minute. It looks like I got another phone call. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure thing. Okay. Hold on there, honey. Bye.
And I'm like, wait, what did he say? And then the Love Boat theme comes on and it's his voice. And he goes, yeah, baby, I'll be right back. You just hold tight there, lovey pie.
He comes back. Okay, where were we, honey?
I'm like, I I'm a guy, right?
Oh, baby, I thought we had a good thing going.
So then he would call back like once a week or whatever. And he called me a new term of endearment. And it started off like,
oh, yeah, I'm so sorry that I used that term before. Hey, God, it's good to talk to you again there, honey pie, honey bunches of oats.
Like, honey, bunches of oats.
Oh, yeah, you're my lucky charm.
And then eventually he just turned it to Brand Flake.
Brand Flake. I love the Flakies.
And he would just call me Flaky.
Hey, Flaky, how you doing?
So anyway, that's where that all comes from. So the earned income tax credit, yes, they changed it. They expanded it to be able to try to sucker more people and then claim they were giving them a tax cut when they weren't really cutting taxes. They were adding to the deficit. They were adding to the debt and handing out more subsidies to people because, of course, you got to get everybody in some way attached to the government teat. So to get back to our Earth Day government teat, yes, it's now 50 years old. Oh, joy. And President Biden announced $7 billion in federal grants to supply more than 900,000 low and moderate income homes, which is where we went off on our tangent, our sojourn into intellectual realms, into memory and history. Look it up. You can check it out. Just don't look up. Don't look up the office of Gene Shaheen. You don't want to visit. It's, you know, I don't know what level of hell that is, but it's, you know, you're going in the elevator and don't ever let the elevator get you down. Oh, no. Let's go. So he also declared that Americans can now apply to become the first members of the nation's climate corps that will work to tackle the climate crisis. Now, if I weren't an anarchist, if I weren't a person who wants to have as little to do with the state as possible, and does not want to draw from somebody else's dime involuntarily from, you know, somebody else's dime being forced to pay for me, I would tell all my friends, let's go work for the climate corps and completely screw them up. That would be awesome. You know, just, you know, like you're going around with a dune buggy out there, you know, ripping up stuff and going crazy. It would be the funniest stinking thing. And then you leave a legacy of, like, you know, the climate corps was absolutely destructive and left trash all over the place. But I wouldn't want to do that to the environment either. But it would be an example of how public lands are managed. And of course, the more the EPA does, the more it implies that your land is public land. And of course, from the very outset, the idea of the state claims that a portion of your land is public land anyway, because they've got to derive a portion of your earnings or what you have for your property, for property taxes, whatever, whether it's land property or money property or the property you have in yourself, they claim a chunk of it. They are the ultimate occupiers. That is the state. It assumes it can occupy your life. It just depends who's in charge, and it keeps growing. And now they assume they can occupy lives of people who haven't even been born yet. Another $1 trillion of debt every 100 days, atop a $34 trillion debt already. Good. This is swell, Mom. Couldn't get any better than this. Put the bankruptcy on a plate, Otto. You'll enjoy it more. Couldn't get any better than this, Mom. This is swell. Thanks, Repo Man, for the good times. And thanks, Mike Nesmith, for funding the film Repo Man, one of the most ingenious films ever made. Oh, man. So here it is. In aviator sunglasses, I'm glad you offered that little accoutrement to the story. Biden made the announcement against the lush green of Prince William Forest Park in Virginia as he marked Earth Day, describing the Environmental Protection Agency's Solar for All project as an effort to reduce energy costs for low and moderate income families while cutting 5 million metric tons. And here they do it, as Eric Peters and I have mentioned, carbon dioxide is not pollution, but they call it carbon pollution. It also will create 200,000 so-called good-paying union jobs over the next 5 years, he said, and they don't even have that in quotes. It's as if that's confirmed. So he's playing it up to the unions. You can see, of course, he was in front of the IBEW, and he's got his little, I'm almost doing the Hitler thing, but I can't raise my arm up that high, salute. And there you go. That's our first touch of wonderment for Earth Day. Yeah, but what are some of the roots of Earth Day? Well, let's go back in time, first with a still shot and then with some exceptional stuff that pretty much started his show today. The man I honor every day when I get up and I watch and I work and I study and I say, I hope I can come up to even half the levels of this guy's fairness and intellect and research and calmness on the air and wit as well. He is, of course, David Knight. We'll talk about David Knight in just a minute. But first, I want to mention another great stellar researcher and guest on this show. She has her own show, Courtney Turner. Courtney, I don't know if you're watching right now, but yesterday she posted this. This is from the Club of Rome's 1992 Global Revolution document. Now, If you are a listener of Rush Limbaugh, you are very well aware of this because, of course, they took the term global warming and they had to change it because there was no record of warming from basically the early 1990s through the mid 2000s for approximately 17 years. And that is even based on their ground-based temperature readers that they had to manipulate. And that's why ClimateGate 1 and 2 exist. And they had to hide the decline over the course of from the 1930s through the 2000s. And if you go to Real Climate Science, you'll see the two graphs. He flashes in a GIF and he shows you how they manipulated the temperatures. First, the temperatures were going down and then they made the temperatures go up. Amazing what they can do with those algorithms, huh? Yeah. Hey, man, he's got some rhythm. No, he's got algorithm and he doesn't like rock and roll. He's going to label you unlistenable and put a barcode on you. So it goes back further than that, of course, to the limits of growth document from the Club of Rome as far as documents go. And that was 20 years before this 1992 document. But in addition to that, it goes even further back than that. It goes back to people like Paul Ehrlich, who, yes, lost his bet against economist Julian Simon, who wrote the Ultimate Resource books 1 and 2, and explained that the ultimate resource is the human mind. In fact, the term resource is only applicable when a human being finds that something is valuable to him in his or her life. It is subjective. And then through testing in the market, people begin to recognize that could be a resource for me. Providers begin to recognize that could be a resource for me. So the ultimate resource in a world of scant resources that we start off with, those basics like air and water and things like that, but actually getting the water to places or storing the water, those are applications of human ingenuity that require free time and effort and one's own decision as to whether or not the effort was worth it. That's why I'm a free market economist. That's why I'm a voluntarist. All of that moral stuff of leaving your neighbors alone then translates into the economic choices people make and productivity gains and better living standards and the ability to make things for less and then make them available to people who formerly couldn't even buy them because they were indigent, otherwise known as poor Joe Biden. Yes. So it goes back to Paul Ehrlich and it goes back even further than that. All the way back, really, to Plato. Plato's ideas were very, very occultic. And Plato obviously believed that certain people should be in charge of the resources. And of course, for his greatest city-state, the noble republic, the just republic, it had to be run how? On the noble lie. The people in charge would define what was truth. And they would tell the noble lie. I know there is that perfect example of hypocrisy. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. But the noble lie, very important to consider how they continue to do this through the ages. In the 1800s, it was used for eugenics. They didn't want misogyny. It was used against Catholics when they moved in here. That's one of the reasons public schools started up in the United States, government-run schools. They couldn't get them. They tried over and over and over again, even into the early 1800s. Private schools and church schools were doing it, and parents were doing it at home. They kept trying to do it in Boston, and Bulfinch, the architect, funded a study. He wanted it, and it turned out that 96% of the students around the Boston area were educated privately through sixth grade, and the qualitative difference between what a sixth grader has and even what an eighth grader or 10th grader has today, what they used to have is totally different. You look at Common Sense by Thomas Paine, you know, like a million people read that in the colonial era. That would have been a multi-million bestseller. That would have been like Harry Potter level, right? Shows you how many people were literate. That's why de Tocqueville was so impressed when he came over here, ended up writing Democracy in America rather than the original plan that he had, which was to write a book about the penal system. He was going to tour prisons in the United States. And he was just so impressed by the low level of indigence and the high level of literacy and how that happened through voluntary means and private education and churches. He was really impressed. And he gave warnings about just those type of perfidious people who would try to take advantage of the so-called democracy claim that what they wanted was for democracy. And we've seen it run through all the way through Rousseau, who hated private property, prior to Karl Marx, who sort of played off of that towards the death of the royal peerage system, as some of the former royal peers were now getting into so-called private markets, but they weren't really private markets. They had enough clout that they got acts of parliament passed just for themselves to take over tons of land during that period, which was called the enclosure movement period in England. And that lasted over 100 years, right? So Marx was correct in criticizing certain people in power, but he also brought about the hatred. He was able to transfer the hatred that many people had of the medieval peerage system and the class system that they had into an assumed class system for free markets. And what he was actually criticizing weren't really free markets. It's much like today when they criticize capitalism, they try to equate the mixed economy, fascism, cronyism that we have today, otherwise known as mercantilism, in 1776 when Adam Smith released the Wealth of Nations. They try to equate what that is and apply the term capitalism to it, which is why many free market economists don't use the term capitalism. They use free markets because capitalism has been sullied. It was even used by Marx to try to sully free markets. So that movement, that idea of, well, there are only limited resources and somebody's got to control the resources. Plato had that idea. It went through Rousseau. It went through Hobbes. All the social contract people who say, you've signed this government contract. It's for your good. Even John Locke, who supposedly protected private property with his theories in the Second Treatise, they all were pushing an assumption that you sign on to it, sign on to whatever the government says. And of course, then there are going to be some barriers up there with the Constitution. Locke at least said you can revolt. Okay. His assumption for the government actually leads to automatic revolt because he says, you know, men have the right to revolt if their rights are being trampled upon. But the rest of his superstructure is the government should exist and trample upon people's rights to protect their rights. You know, and there's this complete tautology. But anyway, so let's go back to Courtney Turner, because she has one of the more recent moves with the so-called climate change MacGuffin, as David Knight would say. Stay tuned for more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. And remember, find us Monday through Friday on Rumble, Rockfin, and on my Twitter /X at Guard Goldsmith, and now on YouTube, I hope for a long time, at 6 p.m. Monday through Friday.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on join the Free State Project and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
Let's keep rolling with our investigation into the lovely man-made holiday, of course, for collectivists to try to take more and more of our choices, our freedoms, and just the very idea of logic away from us. Earth Day on Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. So let's go back to Courtney Turner, because she has one of the more recent moves with the so-called climate change MacGuffin, as David Knight would say. And I've got my MacGuffin t-shirt on. Oh, it's up there. It's not on the rack. It's just sort of leaning over on the side there. The common enemy of humanity is man. And if you're listening on freeworld.fm, I'm reading from her screen cap. And she writes, it's a Gaia religion, and the Club of Rome admitted it was propaganda in their Global Revolution document, 1992. The common enemy of humanity is man. That's the headline of this piece that she copied and put out there from 1992, their global revolution, George Goebbels' revolution. I sounded like Tom Brokaw, didn't I? Global warming. We'll see you tomorrow night. In searching, they say, for a new enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, it's always for your protection, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. In their totality and in their interactions, these phenomena do constitute a common threat which demands the solidarity of all peoples, they tell you, Plato. But in designing them as the enemy, we fall into the trap about which we have already warned, namely, mistaking symptoms for causes. All these dangers are caused by human intervention, and it is only through changing attitudes and behavior that they can be overcome. The real enemy, then, is humanity itself. I know you're shocked, right? Like I'm not telling you something you didn't already know. Well, now I want to give a big round of applause, and I wish I had an applause button to press this for David Knight today. He and Travis, they knocked it out of the park. They just nailed it. And Karen, got to give Karen some kudos as well. Kudos for Karen if you're watching. What a great team, David Knight Show. So if you see this on my screen, you'll see I'm not playing anything right now, but you see I've got the freeze frame from Rockfin. If you go 3 minutes and 26 seconds into the opening, just after it does the Alfred Hitchcock opening, and I get a vibe that a lot of the ladies felt a little nervous around Hitchcock, I think. I don't know how nervous, but I think, you know, slightly nervous. Some of them, not all of them. Especially the blonde ladies, I think. But I got to say, and I see Harps has all these comments on the side. It's so cool. You know, I was just thinking about people listening in Australia and everything. Only Australia, though. No, just kidding. But David opened it with this montage of footage from not the 90s, but of course the 70s when Earth Day started. Some scenes from Boston. Yeah, Logan Airport. Yeah, I know they're housing migrants there now on people's tax cash. I know it would be nice to have your move paid for. I know it's great. Well, and I love it how they tell us, well, they're climate refugees. Oh, they are? You mean those people who fled Libya after the place was destroyed and fled Syria after the United States started bombing it and occupied a third of it? Ah, I guess the term war is no longer extant. You have to call it climate. I get it. That's what they're afraid of, right? Climate. Okay. And then those subsidies of paying for airfare and food and travel and giving them $10,000 debit cards and letting them hang out in Logan Airport where the rest of us have to get our gonads rubbed down. Yeah, I guess there's a little no incentive for people to move on somebody else's dime. Well, here it is. It's all about collectivism and removal of private property. It's warmed over Rousseauism. It's warmed over eugenics. It's warmed over Ludditeism. And all of those things combined, going all the way back to Platonic elitism and the idea that there's some sort of great genius that comes from the occult, that comes from Mother Earth, and mankind can tap into it, whether it's brought to us by Hermes or it's brought to us by uniting all our minds into a giant gestalt. Here's this wonderful, I have to play this for you. Go please sign up for David Knight Show. You got to see this. I wanted to promote David. The minute I saw this, I'm going to play maybe 35, 40 seconds of this. You got to see this.
Yet the gravity of the message of Earth Day still came through. Act or die. A good part of the effort to make this Earth Day a success was concentrated, of course, in the major population and pollution centers. We have a report on several of the big cities, beginning with Robert Shackney in Boston.
It had been a small and, it seemed, a thoroughly peaceful, non-disruptive demonstration. Students finishing Earth Day with what they called a die-in at Boston's Logan Airport.
Welcome, Robert Zion.
Hello, carbon monoxide.
In
terms of air pollution, Chicago ranks close to the top nationally, which isn't much to sing about, but that they did at a mass rally in the Loop to mark Earth Day. Over 4,000 persons came to listen to the singing and the speeches, much less than what was expected. Among the recommendations to improve the environment, the establishment of pollution courts to quickly try offenders, and the elimination of the internal combustion engine, a suggestion no doubt aimed at purifying the city's often choking atmosphere. Mike Pappas, CBS News, Chicago.
Another speaker who vowed as a college girl never to bear children and who works now with Planned Parenthood, Stephanie Mills.
I think that it's terribly important for us to begin to involve ourselves in politics so that we can turn the system around.
You might remember that there was a period when on the whole Earth appeared to be cooling. Well, that changed. During the 80s, we had a much better, more precise representation of temperatures. This data sets were scrubbed and at least two groups.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had much better representation, not real measurements. As David has said, as you probably have said, I don't want to be too assumptive, but they're trying to compare temperatures from, say, the beginning of the century and the end of the century. They're trying to compare temperatures from the 2021 era to, say, 1721. You know, mercury thermometers, they're trying to compare data with temperature readers subsidized by the government that are on airport tarmacs and don't even comport with the satellite data that they get that aren't on airport tarmacs and outside air conditioning vents. It's just such a clown show. And these people eat it up. So does NPR.
We're able to say, yeah, Earth is warming.
In the beginning of the summer of 1988, there was a big international conference held at Toronto, which was just one more in these series of conferences that the press hadn't paid much attention to. But it happened that the summer of 1988 was unusually hot. It was unusual drought. There was all kinds of bad weather things going on, and reporters converged on the Toronto conference and started to spend a lot of attention to it. And the Toronto conference final report said global warming is a really big problem and policymakers got to do something about it.
The weather in the Sonuita area continues fair, very fair. Now in the central portion, there's a
this
low
was a pretty good bit, dude. I definitely enjoyed that, but we'll just pause it right there. Great
velocity.
Stuff from David Knight. And yeah, you know, it's amazing that the collective has gotten this far to the point where, yes, of course, they can regulate the type of car you buy, all these different kinds of things, going all the way over into, yes, get this, you've got to be very sensitive. I'm going to mention this one again. You got to be very, very sensitive because, yes, same-sex couples are vulnerable to the negative effects of climate change. I mentioned this last night on the show. Chaya Raichik put this out. This is from the LA Blade. And she wrote, new, climate change is homophobic. Oh, man. So you got one canard piled up on top of another canard. Same-sex couple households disproportionately live in coastal areas, cities, and areas with poorer infrastructure and less access to resources. Oh, there's that term, resources. How do you define that? I don't know. It's so interesting, isn't it? Well, let's take the opportunity now to delve a little bit further into the Earth Day stuff. And for that, I'm going to turn to Rumble and the MRC TV channel on Rumble, because there's even more coming about, you know what, climate change. This, we got to mention this one on the show yesterday, and this is my new video. They put it together. Let me give it to you. There might be one of those ads popping up here, so let me make sure I got it all covered. And yeah, here we are. Look, they even did really cool graphics. Good team at MRC TV. Decommission deception. This will show you how honest they are. And I mentioned a lot of things in my article last night. I read a little bit of it. But as I mentioned, I figured they would probably have the video out today. So here it is, everybody. Get ready. Here we go. Oh, we're going to have an ad, of course. Oh, but I already turned the volume down. That's good. So that's it. I'm psyched. Hey, by the way, also, thank you so much for watching in X. We're seeing the numbers rising over in X. I really appreciate that. And let me know if you're getting the volume and everything, guys. Give me the thumbs up on the volume stuff. I just want to make sure that you're getting sound appropriately there. And Taylor Saunders, Tom Cooper, nice to have there, everybody. So, yeah, just let me know that you're getting the proper audio, okay? Here we go. Let's check it out, my friends. As they say, check it out now, Funk Soul Brother. Oh, yeah. All right. Tom Cooper, man. I love that Misfits thing. Yeah, give me the heads up. I'm going to start up. Here we go.
Exposing the collectivist. It's with mixed feelings that one reports on yet another revelation exposing the collectivist climate cult and many of its tax-funded members. On the one hand, each inexcusable and stunning example of bias and underhanded data manipulation adds to the library of extant evidence telling the world about this ridiculous, idiotic grift. And that's heartening, since it makes the ripoff and the wrongdoers ever more obvious. On the other hand, it's frustrating to know how long many people have been warning a relatively numb populace about the illegitimate claims and backroom deals, the fascist politicians and bureaucrats playing favorites with what they variously describe as electric, green, sustainable, carbon neutral, stakeholder, and so on, business interests, and the so-called scholars who back them and also get a portion of the filthy lucre. Perhaps because we battle entrenched media and a special interest cabal who stifle us, we've had to wait a long time before sizable numbers of people worldwide have caught on to our warnings and investigations. But this time, the news is so massive, perhaps even your neighbor wearing his Anthony Fauci for Emperor t-shirt and buying so-called carbon credits actually might be hearing the news. Hi, everyone. I'm Gardner Goldsmith for MRC TV. And the news is the revelation that more than 30% of the so-called temperature stations on which the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, relies for its manipulated mixture of temperature data is fabricated make-believe for a make-believe crisis in order to hand politicians here and in international agencies alarming reports about how close our use of efficient petrochemical energy is taking us to their fantastical climate apocalypse. Katie Spence reports for the Epoch Times, quote, when recalling past temperatures to make comparisons to the present and, more importantly, inform future climate policy, officials such as, this would be UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, Mr. Guterres, and President Biden rely in part on temperature readings from the United States Historical Climatology Network, USHCN. The network was established to provide an accurate, unbiased, up-to-date historical climate record for the United States. NOAA states, and it has recorded more than 100 years of daily maximum and minimum temperatures from stations across the United States. And of course, the evidence suggests that they're far, far from accurate and unbiased. Well, we all know how much they care. They care so much that rather than ask us for our money, as peaceful people might do, and rather than having open debates and showing their data and sources from the outset, the big movers and shakers behind the NOAA reports, and by the way, have a fun time trying to find NOAA in the Constitution. Well, the big shakers behind the NOAA reports take our cash through compulsion and appear revealed as the fabricators that scandals such as ClimateGate 1 and 2 showed many of the UN's International Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, climate researchers seemed to be. It looks like this unscrupulous method of caring with our cash is being exposed even more. Quote, they're physically gone, but still report data like magic, said Lieutenant Colonel John Shuchuk, a certified consulting meteorologist. NOAA fabricates temperature data for more than 30% of the 1,218 USHCN reporting stations that no longer exist. As Spence notes, Shuchuk calls these ghost stations, almost the flip side of what occurred when the Soviet Union collapsed in the 1990s, when the USSR stopped funding temperature stations in Siberia. Now, those closures eliminated a large chunk of relatively cooler temperatures from the IPCC data sets. But the so-called climate researchers, well, they didn't compensate for the change in their data pool, which then had a higher ratio of temperature stations from, yeah, you got it, warmer regions. Quote, Mr. Shuchuk said USHCN stations reached a maximum of 1,218 stations in 1957. But after 1990, the number of active stations began declining due to aging equipment and personnel retirements. NOAA still records data from those ghost stations by taking the temperature readings from surrounding stations and recording their average for the ghost station, followed by an E for estimate. The addition of the ghost station data means NOAA's monthly and yearly reports are not representative of reality, said Anthony Watts, a meteorologist and senior fellow for environment and climate at the Heartland Institute. If this kind of process were used in a court of law, then the evidence would be thrown out as being polluted. And that is precisely a major part of the problem underlying the political and pop media climate scam. They assume foremost two things. First, they assume that government can make a claim for damage and tell people what their peaceful activity costs the world. That's not only impossible and arrogant, it's an arrogation of private tort action. But of course, politicians know that most people are unaware of this, and they claim to be the protectors, the paladins, forbidding peaceful use of engines and oil heat and natural gas and coal via ex ante diktats without anyone actually bringing a personal injury tort suit against a user of fuel. As a result, and as Watts notes, there is no argument, no evidence put before a jury. There's only propaganda, data manipulation, and threats to shut down our freedom of choice, of travel, and even of speech. Quote, Mr. Shuchuk said the USHCN data is the only long-term historical data the United States has. In these days of apparent climate crisis, you would think that maintaining actual temperature reporting stations would be a top priority, but they instead manufactured data for hundreds of non-existent stations. This is a bizarre way of monitoring a climate claimed to be an existential threat, he said. Observed data is real. Altered and fabricated data is not, period. The website NOAA Crappy lists all of the ghost or zombie stations, their location, how long they've been closed, and then links to NOAA's recordings. And what about the second part of this? Will this news spread? Will people with heart and a devotion to honesty tell their friends and try to expose the conniving political thugs? They'd better act quickly. After all, President Biden Friday further restricted oil and gas drilling on so-called federal land in Alaska, an edict that reminds us that the U.S. government has zero constitutionally granted power to run land in Alaska. Indeed, Alaskan Senator Dan Sullivan, a Republican, just spoke up to protest Biden's move. The fight isn't over, but it's not lost. If truthful, concerned people call the politicians and their tax-fed climate fear sycophants to task, if people remind others about the insane sources of the data, such as these ghost stations and stations located on airport tarmacs, a few more folks might scratch their heads and wonder. The deeper problems concerning the cost of carbon penalties that the feds are working hard to shut down farms and stop grazing on land and penalize businesses with, And how about all those subsidies to EV makers? All the other grifts and grafts involved with this and penalties that they're imposing on people or want to impose on people. Well, those all deserve lots of sanitizing light as well. But right now, with this information, we can open a few more eyes. So let's get out the info. Thank you for watching, one and all. Please like and follow us on Rumble, where they don't censor us. Yes.
All right. And I want to just jump in real quick, and I want to go full screen right now because I just got to check YouTube, and one of my good buddies from Australia, Tim Humphreys, is watching. Tim, thank you for your comment, buddy. It's so good to see you there, mate. It's so good to see you. I hope everything's going well out there in Queensland, my man. Oh, man, do I miss it. And Harps, if you're watching, thank you. I hope you guys get to meet each other someday. Maybe we can bring you both on sometime as guests from down under just to prove that there is a Southern Hemisphere and that the Southern Cross does exist. I've seen it. And yes, the water does go down the drain the other direction. Oh, man. So I hope you like that one. And I hope you found that worthwhile. I was really glad that the MRCTV team was nice enough to let me put that together. I want to go back to David Knight's video here and just remind everybody of what we saw a couple seconds ago about the manipulation of the data set as we see Mr. Spence in just a second. Here we go.
Warming.
In the beginning of the summer.
Spencer Wirt.
There was a big international conference held at Toronto, which was just one more in these series of conferences that the press hadn't paid much attention to. But it happened that the summer of 1988 was unusually hot. It was unusual drought. There was all kinds of bad weather things going on, and reporters converged on the Toronto conference and started to spend a lot of attention to it. And the Toronto conference final report said global warming is a really big problem and policymakers got to do something about it.
And of course, they will participate in perpetual gaslighting because how dare you stand against it? You must conform because the little guy is going to get hurt, just like we saw with Joe Biden with all the subsidies. So, Tim, if you want to move to the U.S. and join me in joining their climate army and then subverting it, let's go for it, man. Let's give it a shot. That would be fun. Oh, man. Just leaving acts, all sorts of havoc in our wake. We could be like the Blues Brothers, you know, driving through a mall. Woo! Hooray for climate! Yeah. There's more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live coming up. Remember, find us Monday through Friday on Rumble, Rockfin, and on my Twitter /X at Gard Goldsmith. And you can also now find us, as long as they allow us to stay there, on YouTube, 6 p.m. Monday through Friday Eastern Time. And do visit my Substack. That's the Gardner Goldsmith Substack. Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash with BitRefill.com, where you can buy gift cards from big retailers, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Thanks to Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at Dash.org. That's Dash.org.
Protection. Eleutheromania. The insatiable desire for freedom.
Filibuster. Holy stink.
It's the new 3-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Free Talk Live. We continue with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live, diving into another big topic. NPR and the new head of NPR's collectivist canard that there is no truth except that which the higher-ups will dictate to you. Yes, she comes from Wikipedia. And by the way, folks, I forgot to mention in this segment on my live show that the payoff for the whole thing here is as I go through all this and she claims there is no truth, you know, there has to be a central controller for truth. As I describe it, and as I go through all the information talking about this woman claiming that everybody's got their own truths and somebody's got to decide for everybody. Yeah, Wikipedia erased me. I don't even exist on Wikipedia. So I think I might be the actual evidence to show, as I'm sure many other people are also evidence to show, that the Wikipedia model doesn't work because it is in their hands and it is politicized. Let's continue with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. So, with that stated, I want to turn to one more item before we head on into the transition, as David Bowie might say, transmission. We're going to look at a piece from Eric Peters, and I texted Eric about this because this is just great. You know how he and David Knight and I and others, you probably, many of you in the audience, are very well aware of the way Volkswagen was shaken down by the federal government over its very efficient, showing off many of the other manufacturers' diesel engines that they were able to put into all sorts of different cars in its line. Well, the federal government slammed them for something like $16 billion in fines because they didn't find that the numbers that the Volkswagen folks claimed they would produce were correct based on the government-mandated tests, which already are immoral. That people should just be able to buy the car, and if they feel that they've been defrauded by the company, they can bring a personal suit. The government can't say, yes, we give you permission to sell this on our terms. Sounds more like the old overlords of the feudal days, huh? Yeah, well, this piece called Watch Out Toyota was just released today. I've retweeted this one. You can find it on my X feed. There you go. Still trying to get the handle right on the new name. But you can see the Terminator, the phone, targeted for termination. And he goes into first that background on Volkswagen. So I thought this would be a good reminder to see just how powerful the federal government is. And he talks about how Toyota is coming out with a very efficient car that unfortunately is probably going to be targeted. And he tells you the way that they're going to target it, the federal government. So here it is. He says, you may remember the so-called cheating on federal emissions certification tests, obviously immoral, unconstitutional, imbroglio, that resulted in Volkswagen pulling off the market its very successful, because very popular, TDI diesel engines, which had been available in practically every model vehicle Volkswagen sold until about 2015, right around the time the EV push really began in earnest. And don't forget, Volkswagen has started to change course, as many other manufacturers are, stopping their manufacturing of EV batteries, cutting back, and then some manufacturers are no longer even going to be making many of their EV cars anymore because they're not selling to anybody except government. That's the thing. Nobody wants them. They realize they don't work properly. And then, of course, when police use EVs, they can't get to the destinations. Yeah, same thing with some EV ambulances. Isn't that wonderful? I wonder if the government would have them operating all EV tanks. I doubt it. And of course, as David Knight noted today, those tanks are becoming very vulnerable to drones. VW's TDI engines, writes Eric Peters, not only delivered 50 plus miles per gallon and 600 plus miles of driving range, they were also available in low cost vehicles such as the Jetta sedan, Golf hatchback, and the new Beetle, which were all cars almost anyone could afford to buy. And that could not stand. Who, after all, would want to buy a $50,000 electric vehicle with a putative, not actual, driving range of maybe 250 miles or so, 250 or so miles that effectively forced the person who bought it to plan their life around recharging it, assuming they could afford it, when they could buy a $23,000 diesel-powered Jetta or Golf that could be driven more than twice as far before it was necessary to stop for less than 5 minutes to refuel it? The answer is very few people. More finally, many more people would have continued to buy Volkswagen's low-cost, long-range diesel-powered cars, and that would have made it clear that most people either didn't want an EV or couldn't afford one. It would have made it much harder for other automakers to justify making more EVs rather than more vehicles like Volkswagen's TDI-powered vehicles. It was not accidental that Volkswagen was singled out rather than Mercedes or BMW or Audi, all of which also sold diesel engines. The so-called cheating VW was accused of was incidental because, in the first place, Every vehicle manufacturer programs their vehicles to produce the lowest emissions and highest gas mileage on the tests. In real-world driving, the emissions are always a little higher and the gas mileage lower because people will drive them in such a way as to override the programming. The government knows this. Everyone in the car business knows it. It has never been cause for a crusade until VW. In the second place, the emissions were in fact incidental, as in fractions of a fraction of difference. You have probably heard that VW's diesel produced up to 40 times more than the allowable quantity of oxides of nitrogen. Ye gods! The allowable level. Again, an assumption, normalcy bias. People think, oh, well, the government's got an allowable level, so obviously it must pertain to my health. Well, not quite. And of course, it's not based on any form of tortious damage case that anyone has brought and proven damage. That's the point about global warming as well. But of course, it's all cultural Marxism. It's all class Marxism. It's all now global green Marxism. And the little guy is represented by Mother Earth and all the little people out there that the government's going to protect from you because you selfish jerk, you actually want to have air conditioning. As Barack Obama told people in Africa, well, now if everybody wanted air conditioning, got it, well, the planet would burn up. Sweetie, honey pie, Brand Flake. How you doing there, Brent? Oh, you're kind of hot? Oh, that's okay. Oh, you want to come to my house right near the coast down there in Martha's Vineyard? No, I'm not worried about the flooding. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm very worried about the flooding. That's why I bought the house. No, I know it doesn't make sense, Brand Flake, but I don't often make sense. Doesn't matter. I can define words. Just like Lewis Carroll said, as Alice spoke to Humpty Dumpty, she said, how can you make words mean so many different things? He said, oh, you're asking the wrong question. It just depends who's in charge. That's all. Honey pie. All right, Tony the Tiger. Love you, LT Gray. So, hey, you're frosted. I like that. So then we have, so is Hunter Biden. So he says, as in fractions of fractions, you've probably heard that VW's diesel produced up to 40 times more than the allowable quantity of oxides of nitrogen. Note the mendacious up to, which should always be translated as much less than. And it was almost never explained that the 40 times more was in reference to a fraction, not a whole number. What mattered was the VW was selling affordable diesels, which meant it was selling a lot of them. The high-end brands, Mercedes, BMW, Audi, sold a few to the affluent, and it didn't matter because those diesel-powered vehicles were as expensive as EVs. So VW had to be nailed to the proverbial cross for its sins. Will Toyota be next? And this is the last bit. There's a lot more. I'll just give you this real quick. Toyota sells a number of low-cost, high-mileage, long-range vehicles that also make EVs look ridiculous. Models like the 24 Corolla Hybrid I just finished test driving. You can read the full review here in his hyperlink. Yes, NewsGuard, he has a hyperlink to his own article in case you want to claim that he's a liar. This Tesla Model 3-sized sedan, stickers for $23,300. It's not a Tesla, of course, it's Toyota, but it's the size of the Model 3, and goes 53 highway miles on a gallon of gas, like an old Datsun. It goes 600 highway miles on 11 gallons of gas, a full tank, which takes about 3 minutes to fully replenish. The 24 Tesla Model 3 stickers, the Tesla model, for $38,990, almost $39,000, with its standard range battery that might allow you to drive 270 miles in the city. If you take it on the highway or out in the cold, it will go a lot less far than that. And regardless, when it runs low on charge, you'll have to wait at least 20 to 30 minutes at a fast charger, which is only fast in relation to how slow it is to charge at home, where it takes hours to recover a partial charge because, of course, homes aren't built to take that sort of charge. And if they were to try to take that sort of powerful charge, they'd catch on fire. The whole thing is absurd, writes Eric. More finely, hybrids like the Corolla and the new hybrid Camry make EVs look absurd, and that will not be allowed to stand. The EV pushers, who aren't really pushing EVs per se, but rather using EVs to push most of us out of driving, will find an excuse to go after Toyota, just as they found one to go after Volkswagen. The cretinous EPA apparatchik Michael Regan has already hinted at what it will be. And here's the crux. Hybrids, especially the ones that have the ability to recharge by plugging in, aren't being plugged in often enough. He says they're running on engine power too much. Their emissions are thus too much, even though, as in the case of Volkswagen's TDI diesels, they amount to nothing much. The dirty little secret the EPA doesn't want people to know is that emissions have been a non-issue for decades, since the late 1990s, by which time almost all, as in better than 98% of the meaningfully harmful emissions, had been eliminated by then, which is now 30 plus years ago. To admit this would be to concede that further emissions regulations were unjustified because unnecessary. And of course, they're not even constitutional. No tortious claims being brought from person to person to claim that your use of some car is causing his asthmatic response. And that would imply the EPA itself is no longer necessary. Well, it's never been constitutional. So, of course, that is, as he mentions, emissions were reframed to encompass carbon dioxide, which was never before regarded as an emission in the regulatory sense, because CO2 has nothing to do with air pollution, or for that matter, with climate change. That's right. Al Gore used the Michael Mann hockey stick graph, and it shows what people assume to be carbon dioxide increases in the atmosphere preceding temperature increases in the atmosphere. But if you actually zoom in on the graph, which starts during the mini ice age, rather than going back in time to when there was the higher medieval warming period, the mini ice age shows low temperatures. All of a sudden, seemingly concurrent, perhaps caused by, Al Gore implies, the introduction of the internal combustion engine, temperatures start to rise. Well, it just so happens that that fits the 1500-year cycle that most closely is matched by solar energy output cycles. If you actually look at the graph, as opposed to the assumption about greenhouse gas emissions, particularly carbon dioxide, the temperatures rise before the carbon dioxide emissions are measured as higher. So let me see if I can find this in my screenshots for you, everybody. I'm just going to open this up real quick and see if I can show you. If you're new to the show, if you're just watching on YouTube, I want to make sure that I put my money where my mouth is. So here it is. This is literally the graph. They also had a book of Al Gore's Ridiculous Inconvenient Truth. And he's on his little hydraulic riser and standing next to the graph. And as you can see, first I'll point out, and you'll see here, that the graph starts at a time period where, if the graph were to go back, this is time on the x-axis, and temperature and other measures for carbon dioxide are on the y-axis. If you were to go back in time towards the event horizon over here, towards the horizon, you would see the temperatures are actually much higher, because that was the medieval warming period. But Michael Mann started, and he won't release his data, not even in a lawsuit that he lost in Toronto against a guy he tried to sue for defamation. He thought, evidently, he thought that the guy would back down, but the guy moved forward in his own defense, and Michael Mann ended up losing in court and having to pay. I believe the judge was determining that he was going to have to pay the court fees of the man he sued, who was also a climatologist and has since passed away, because Mann wouldn't produce his data. And as David Nitis said, they were trying to bring suit when Michael Mann moved over. Was he at University of Virginia, and then he went over to University of Pennsylvania, or was it North Carolina? And first, and he wouldn't release the information that he had collected, Michael Mann, even though it was a government university paying his salary. It was tax money paying his salary. So let me show you a little bit closer. I'm going to zoom in on this, everybody. If you're just listening, hopefully you'll be able to see this a little bit later. Check out the video on Rumble, YouTube, and Rockfin. And I will post this also on my X feed a little bit later, sort of what Courtney did, just a little historical information. You can see here, obviously, if you go back much further, here's the insert from somebody who actually showed what wasn't showed in the graph. Temperatures are much higher many, many years ago. Then they went down. And then that's where they start the graph, which is, of course, the medieval warming period. But if you go back further, temperatures were much cooler and then much warmer. So there's this giant cycle. But right here is what they put in as red on the graph, and they make you think that the red is the temperature, but it's not. It is blue that is the temperature, and red is carbon dioxide. And if you actually look at the graph, you can see the measurements of carbon dioxide come about 800 years after the rise of temperatures. So the higher carbon dioxide levels come approximately on average 800 years after. And I worked at Annie's Bookstop part-time for many years, and the owner of Annie's Bookstop, much to my chagrin, got a children's school book version of An Inconvenient Truth. And I opened it up for her, and I said, Nancy, have you looked at this? And she said, well, what do you mean? I said, Nancy, look at this graph. And I showed her with a magnifying glass. I said, take a look at this graph. Just take a look at it. And I said, I want to show you what is actually going on in this graph. And of course, in the graph, you can see what I showed her. And she said, oh, wow. I was like, yeah, you know, this is not an honest graph. This is not right. And so she felt bad that she was actually selling the book. And she never bought it again. So I appreciated her not selling the book again. That was good because it was a falsehood, you know. So want to now turn you to another story real quick. I've got to get something loaded up in my system here. And before I do that, there we go. Excellent. Okay, so I want to show you a little bit of something about how truth is still being manipulated by many, many people. So I'm going to, in a moment, start talking about the head of NPR. And for that, we're going to turn to Jimmy Dore. Jimmy Dore, obviously doing a great job. I watch Jimmy Dore a lot. I like his work. And I get a little frustrated because I can't see Jimmy's show all the time. There's so many good shows out there. So I was clued into this by, of course, Richard Grove on Grand Theft World Sunday night. So I'm going to show you this, which I actually was inspired to get from Richard. I might have to manipulate the volume here, so pardon me just for a second. Make sure it's loud enough for you. And I'm going to do this. Okay. So with that sort of long intro, I'm going to give you the introductory articles and information about NPR, the so-called head of NPR, and so on. And for that, you can go to my Sunday News Assembly for all the links. Here it is, number 13 on my Sunday News Assembly. I said, this is nice to see. As radio guys, many people like I, had to compete against NPR stations we were forced to fund with our taxes. How about this indoctrination system not get our money, and instead the stations have to compete in a private market? So, exclusive. Representative Jim Banks introduces legislation to defund NPR, the Daily Caller. But it goes deeper than taking our tax money for political purposes. It goes towards the Marxist idea that they can define truth, the ministry of truth, the Humpty Dumpty on a wall, who is in charge. And what's really the key here that I want to mention is we often hear about nihilistic Marxism, as I mentioned, the lingua non lingua, where you can't even have words mean anything anymore because there is somehow no truth. I mentioned last night on the program, sometimes critics of the Austrian School of Economics try to claim that Austrians are into subjectivity, like Immanuel Kant, right? But it's subjective valuation of things in the market. And for truth, every one of us still has to rely on our subjective view of the world around us. As Immanuel Kant would say, everyone is a subjective being. But we have to be free to be able to decide upon repeated iterations whether or not we think some claim is valid or not. And by use of the term validity in philosophy class, we mean, is it validated by exercising comparisons to the outside world? Okay. Now, it's possible that you could eventually reach the nihilistic mindset and just say there's no outside world, nothing means anything. But as far as trying to be a functional human being, you have to have your body comport with the outside world to a certain degree. Your senses have to make sense of the outside world, or you're going to continue putting your hand on the hot burner. You're going to continue walking out in front of traffic. And the marketplace allows us to subjectively judge how we've done things, whether we've done well, whether something helps us. And then we also get to see how other people independently have taken their own risks and seen how their lives either comport with truth or they don't comport with truth. So it's the marketplace is like life. It's a constantly evolving, checking out of things for our personal sake against what is some sort of thing that's out there that is real. What the postmodernists do, what the cultural Marxists do, is they literally cause themselves to trip over their own assumptions. They literally say there is no truth. Everyone has his or her own truth. So it's not like free market economists would say, you are checking to see how it works for you. You're checking to see on repeated tests, does that seem to comport with what I see as the real world? Are other people seeing certain things in a certain way? Do I see them as having been hurt by their assumptions, or does that seem to make sense, right? And the more iterations of those things happen, the more we can reliably say that probably A is A, right? The identity principle of mathematics, which is so core to even Ayn Rand's philosophy, right? So if someone else is going to say everyone has their own truth, what are they saying? I'm telling you the truth. They're undercutting their own assumption. If someone says there is no truth, then how do they know there is no truth, right? We'll be back with plenty more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Thanks for listening. And remember, you can tune in live Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter /X at Gard Goldsmith. And now, as long as we don't get censored by them, on YouTube.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash instead with some handy websites. BitRefill.com has been accepting Dash for years and has a ton of big-name retailers and brands, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Plus, many of their gift cards are available at a discount. But what about paying your bills? Spritz.finance can do that, and they can send dollars to your bank account in case you still need those for some reason. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Free Talk Live.
We continue with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Remember, check out Liberty Conspiracy every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on Rumble, Rockfin, on YouTube now, as long as they allow us to stay there for a little while, and also on my X, at Gard Goldsmith. You can also check out my Substack. That is the Gardner Goldsmith Substack. And I welcome you to leave comments on any of the posts. You can also sign up for the podcast for our live program, which usually comes out a few hours after the live show finishes. So if someone else is going to say everyone has their own truth, what are they saying? I'm telling you the truth. They're undercutting their own assumption. If someone says there is no truth, then how do they know there is no truth? Right? And this is the core of what we're talking about here in number 13, which I intentionally put in as number 13, because this is the woman who is in charge of NPR. She used to be in charge of Wikipedia. And so let me just do one thing here because my CPU is running way hot. And so we're going to be looking at some of her statements. But first, I want to give you this quick review again of this. The second piece I mentioned here, Wikipedia founder says website is corrupted. Not her, the founder of Wikipedia says website is corrupted by NPR's Catherine Maher. who may have worked with intel agencies. That comes from the National Pulse. And the first piece that I mentioned about Jim Banks introducing legislation to defund NPR comes from the Daily Caller. Now, a little caveat here I do want to mention. I do work on contract for MRC TV, and Brent Bozell and others have been involved in pushes in the past to try to defund NPR. So just wanted to lay that out there. I'm not a full-time employee. I'm only on contract, which is one of the reasons I don't promote my Liberty conspiracy work here, because we just never had it in the contract. So I don't feel that it's honest for me to promote Liberty conspiracy when I do my videos, like, oh, find me on Liberty conspiracy, whatever. I'll ask them when we have the next contract renewal. We'll see how that goes. And it's not like a huge contract either. So if you want to contribute anytime, feel free. But so let's now turn to this video that I was able to collect thanks to the inspiration of Jimmy Dore and his team gathering good information and then Grand Theft World putting this out there. Now, Yuri Berliner was the guy who resigned from NPR, who said that they were highly, highly biased. And as we know, there were no so-called Republicans around him where he worked. And as I mentioned, that is a legacy that goes back to the 70s when there were polls done. I remember my dad was a subscriber to National Review. It showed like 85 to 90 some percent of the people working in the pop media outlets at NBC, ABC, CBS, and PBS, the Dinosaur Four, that they voted for McGovern. And it didn't get any better into the 80s. They did other polls after that. That's why Rush Limbaugh was so popular, right? And Rush pointed out, as I started to bring up a little bit earlier in the climate conversation, Rush pointed out that because they couldn't prove that there was any global warming, they changed it to so-called climate change. So just like Humpty Dumpty, it could mean anything. It could apply to anything. I mean, we're all aware of that, I'm sure. You know, unless you're like, you know, a kid, maybe you're watching the show for the first time, you're like 10 years old or whatever. Start debating with your public school teachers. Rock on. Carry on the tradition. Back when I had hair, they would pull on it, threaten to pour a tab over my, oh, Pepsi over my head. All right. So let's go with Jimmy, as Rick Ocasek would say. Here we go. This is great footage. I'm going to break it up into parts and I want to get your comments. Here we go. This is about Truth, the former head, former director for a while of Wikipedia, who's now the head of NPR, the one who looks like Seven of Nine. Welcome to the Borg, where there is no truth.
Everybody, here's the new CEO.
Let me turn that up a little bit for you. Hold on a second. Let me take that off the screen and get that volume up higher for you, okay? Just a quick, got to do this. I'm going to put on the audio compressor and then bring it up to 250% for you. All right. And I know. I do. All right. So I'll bring that down and go back to Jimmy. All right. Here we are.
Everybody, here's the new CEO at NPR. Are you ready for this, Kurt?
Yeah.
Here's the new CEO. Here's from her TED Talk.
Oh, this should be good.
The hard things, the places where we are prone to disagreement, say politics and religion. Well, as it turns out, not only does Wikipedia's model work there, it actually works really well. Because in our normal lives, these contentious conversations tend to erupt over disagreement about what the truth actually is. But the people who write these articles, they're not focused on the truth.
They're not focused on the truth. You're not supposed to be focused on the truth. What are you?
So, and you hear her statement. So they're debating. The subject upon debate is the truth. But she says they're not focused on the truth. So she just contradicted herself. It's just amazing that the fantasy narratives here are probably some of the biggest, most insanely childish, contradictory, pie-in-the-sky fantasy. Do you realize what you just said a second ago statements that I think I've ever heard in a TED Talk? I mean, this is just amazing. It's like Rupert Sheldrake saying, well, what if the scientific method actually is not right? At least he made an assumption there to test the scientific method. To use the scientific method to test the scientific method. But that itself, of course, is a bit of a tautology. Sort of like this woman saying, there is no truth. Oh, really? Is that true? Go, Jimmy, hit
supposed
me.
To be focused on.
Focus on something else.
What?
Which is the best of what we can know right now.
The truth?
And after 7 years of working with these brilliant...
In the background, that's Kurt Metzger. I'm just going to go back for just a second, which is the best of what we can know now. And Kurt Metzger says, the truth? That is the best that we can know now. You compare it to reality, what you seem to think is reality. And the more tests you do on it, the more people get to debate it, the more they get to look at it. That's awesome. But you don't play Humpty Dumpty. I didn't know this woman was egg-shaped, but apparently she is 7 of 9.
Focused on the truth. You're not supposed to be focused on the truth. What are you supposed to be focused on?
Focus on something else.
What?
Which is the best of what we can know right now.
The truth?
And after 7 years of working with these brilliant folks, I've come to believe that they are onto something. That perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start.
Are you joking? I like how you said might, as if they're like, maybe that's not the best. You think it's the what you should do is not have the truth be the. So that's like so demonic, what you're saying. I don't even believe in that stuff. And that's demonic, what you're saying.
This is the opposite of what you would consider journalism. Journalism is about trying to find a fact and a truth. That's what it's supposed to be about. She's like, nah, that's not a good place to start. Let's see.
Again, how does she say it's not a good place to start? How does she know? Can't test it. It's totally top down. I'm in the eye of the pyramid. I control the Ministry of Truth. And it's all touchy-feely. It's not about truth. It's about feelings. And who is the arbiter of whose feelings get hurt? She is, the people in control. That's how they get away with avoiding reality. They say, well, if you want to participate in a debate, you're going to hurt somebody's feelings. If you're calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, you're actually calling for the extermination of Jews. You're anti-Semitic, even though the Palestinians are the real Semitic ones and the Ashkenazi Jews aren't. I mean, it's just amazing. But don't oppose it, because now you're hurting somebody else's feelings. Now we're judging that, because it's not about truth. It's about feelings.
She thinks.
In fact, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground.
I don't want common ground with liars, you stupid.
Why do you want common ground over falsehoods? We all agree that the moon's made out of cheese. Isn't that? And that's a good place to start.
Is this not Hitler talk?
This is Hitler talk.
Unified Volk, and it don't matter what's true. You're going to tell him, and that's what's important. That's fascism. Wow, that's, I had no idea that she literally, one, said that out loud, and said it in a TED talk.
In a TED talk.
And people sat there and watched it.
And now she's the head of NPR.
That's not even a TEDx quality thing to say.
This is crazy. And why the country's in the state that it's in. But this is part of the reason. This is in the whole reason. This is part of it. Because our news outlets are populated with people like this. Who don't think that truth is a good place to try to meet people. You shouldn't try to convince people of the truth.
You know, she believes in it for her. So I don't even think she's CIA. I think she's like some above that. She's from... We got Council on Foreign Relations.
She came from the Council on Foreign Relations.
The Truman National Security Project.
Again,
and the Atlantic Council. Yeah, I'm going to go back just a second. And I hope this is loud enough for you folks. If I play this again, maybe a little later, I'll bring the volume up a little bit more for you. It should be sufficient. There are some ways that I can tweak it a little more. But yeah, we'll go back. Kurt Metzger's awesome. I'd love to see these guys doing stand-up, bringing back my old stand-up days. It'd be so much fun.
I think she's CIA. I think she's like some above that. She's from, we got Council on Foreign Relations.
She came from the Council on Foreign Relations.
The Truman National Security Project.
Again,
World Economic Forum.
She's
a lizard person.
A lizard person.
Oh, U.S. State Department. Atlantic Council, Democracy and Tech Initiative.
There couldn't be.
What a piece of.
It's like if,
and we'll stop there for a second because Kurt says it so well. Now, the Atlantic Council not only is highly involved with the overthrow of countries and manipulation of different narratives, but I want to remind you that in the summer of 2016, I reported on the so-called DNC hack, which was not a hack. Bill Binney proved that with the download speed had to have been done on site at the DNC. I don't know. Maybe a guy named Seth might have had some knowledge of that, but we can't talk to Seth right now. Sorry, Seth is busy. in another realm. Yeah. But I was writing about that, and the computer drives were not given to the FBI. The DNC, to use the active voice, did not give the drives to the FBI. They gave the drives to a company called CrowdStrike. And I was reporting on this literally that summer, like weeks afterwards. They gave them to CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike was started by a guy. Yeah, you got it, Repo Man. On the Atlantic Council, a member of the Atlantic Council. And I think he was originally Russian, of all things. And the guy brought it back with their report that, oh, yes, clearly, had there been Russian hacking. The fascinating thing about it, the other fascinating thing about it was, as I mentioned before in the show, but if you're new to the show, I want to make sure you got this information. So I'm there. And I don't even know that NewsGuard is breathing down our backs. Like they want to go after us big time, and that the following year they would get funding from the federal government through Portman Murphy to then silence me at MRC TV, right? And that the Virality Project would start doing the same thing, right? That DARPA would be checking out my articles, you know? It's just ridiculous, right? So I'm writing these articles about this guy who's connected to the Atlantic Council. Shortly after I had reported on the overthrow of Ukraine in late 2013, and a buddy of mine who had been at the Obama administration came up and said, hey, where are you getting your information? Yeah, you're right. I'm like, yeah, I know I'm right. Duh. You know, I know the U.S. was involved with it. NATO, all that stuff. I know. So that was before the Nuland phone call got released. So, you know, a lot of people got to hear about that then. But it was a very, very lonely world. And it was lonely reporting on the DNC thing as well. And, what's really fascinating is, or one fascinating anecdote of it is, again, it indicts the Washington Post because their reporter, her name was Wang or Chang or something like that, or I can't remember. But anyway, she did the tech reporting for them. She had a report that came out at like noontime, just like 3 hours after the CrowdStrike report was released that morning. Now, first, if you're a reporter, you have to read the CrowdStrike report. Second, it was a massive article. It was like 2,000 words long. You can't write a 2,000-word piece, get it seen by the editor and the legal department, and then get it out in 3 hours. That's just not going to happen unless you're using AI in 2016. Not going to happen. So it's very clear that the Washington Post, very well known as owned by Jeff Bezos with his CIA connections, got the inside scoop from some people within the deep state connected to the Atlantic Council to release this information to the gullible Washington Post reporters and all the sycophant electronic media that would suck up that information on CNN and MSNBC and say, it was the Russians. Again, pushing this Russian interference canard, trying to focus on who did it rather than what was in the info. Things like the DNC working with the Clinton campaign to push out Bernie Sanders, actually giving the Clinton campaign questions from a CNN debate that they did not provide to Bernie Sanders before the debate, showing how the people in the DNC mocked Bernie Sanders' Jewish supporters, mocked Catholics, all that stuff. Again, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. It's what's being projected on the curtain. And it is, of course, if you are at all critical of that, well, then you must be against the DNC. You must be a Russian hater. You must be somehow an evil person supporting Vladimir Putin. And, of course, you don't like little people who are the working class people that the Dems love so much. And it's all tied together. They'll use any possible spear they can throw at you, any weapon that they can use to demonize you. So let's get back here because they are the arbiters of what is real and what is not real. But then again, they say there is no reality, right? And it's not worth looking for it. Just sit back and relax and open a brew.
Like, if, again, it's like it's worse. It's worse.
I wish it was CIA. I wish it was.
That's what I was just about to say.
Genuinely.
If it was CIA, it would be better.
I don't think they could be this evil.
So she came from the Atlanta Council, the Council on Foreign Relations, the WEF, the WEF.
Yeah, so she's been,
and now she's the head of NPR.
So she's
now, just to point out again, real quick, everybody, the formative members of the WEF were also behind Earth Day. They were behind. Now, you had a lot of, you know, honest, dear heart, you know, caring people who did believe that something terrible was happening to the climate and so on and so forth. They were able to translate the anti-war movement and move that into the climate movement with the hippies now getting out of college. You know, maybe they had a couple showers after they were at Woodstock. Like, what else can we start to protest about, man? You know, that sort of thing, right? So as Vietnam winds down, they use that energy and put it into, to coin a term, they use that energy, that human energy, and put it towards the earth stuff. And who could actually oppose the central authority protecting the earth? Humpty Dumpty on the wall. Humpty Dumpty has yet to have his great fall. We'll continue.
What does that tell you about the people who really control NPR? They wanted someone like her in charge. Yeah. They got her, and the truth doesn't matter. This is so Orwellian, I can't even... I'm having a hard time putting it into words, how crazy and Orwellian this is.
I don't want to throw around words like Illuminati.
This is supposed to be, you're right.
She's in every single thing that's connected to every disgusting thing.
Yes.
She should have a goat head and tits and a dick like a Baphomet.
And so now you know why everybody who listens to NPR doesn't know anything. They don't know anything about the Ukraine war. They don't know anything about Syria. They don't know anything about Libya. They don't know anything about COVID. They don't know anything about Russiagate. They don't know anything about anything.
But she's from a small town in Connecticut, Wilton, Connecticut.
Here we go.
And getting things done.
Getting work done.
That is not to say that the truth doesn't exist.
For you,
nor
does.
Is it to say that the truth isn't important. Clearly, the search for the truth has led us to do great things, to learn great things.
But that's all yesterday.
But not for you.
Wait a minute. But.
Okay.
Did you hear there's a but?
I want to pause it right there.
Wait a minute. I want to.
It's taking a second. The system's. You probably saw a little symbol popping up that my CPU is getting funky again because I'm running another browser for YouTube. I'm probably going to do the YouTube thing over in my on my second computer. I think that'll be the way to do it. But when she says the pursuit for truth has given us great things, right? To paraphrase, that is almost a rhythmic paraphrasing of Marx. If you look at the Communist Manifesto, and I would go through it with the students, put it up on the board. I'd have various students put it up on the wall. We didn't even have a board. We had a wall. And we write on the wall, project the screen on the wall, that sort of stuff. So I put the Communist Manifesto up on the wall, and I would say, okay, let's go through this. One of the things that Marx does, and it's almost amusing. I mean, the guy was such a dirtball, just a really skeezy, weird dude. But one of the things that Marx does at the opening of the Communist Manifesto is he grants that the Industrial Revolution has given people many great things like amazing travel, locomotives, sailing ships, lots of good food that people can get, all these different things, right? He goes through all this stuff and he says, but that's enough. Where we've gone, we've developed far enough, we don't need anymore. How does that seem to ring to what you hear with the modern contemporary Luddites, the neo-Malthusians? Oh, I forgot to mention Malthus before, right? Thomas Malthus. Yeah. You know, that the world population is going to get wiped out as the population bombs, Paul Ehrlich said. And again, he and Julian Simon had that bet. I hope I paid off on that. And Julian Simon bet him, and he bet Julian Simon that after 20 years, a certain basket of commodities would be either more expensive or less expensive relative to inflation. And Julian Simon, and more plentiful or less plentiful. Julian Simon won. Of course he won, because human ingenuity is the ultimate resource. And when we are faced with a world of limited resources, not only do we figure out ways to husband those resources well, we figure out ways to reproduce those resources, make them more efficient, and come up with new resources. The only way we can do that is if we are granted the free time by being efficient at what we need in our lives and then being able to do things with that spare time. Or in some cases, what you might call spare money that then can be leveraged and utilized for new developments and research and investment. So what she says there is very similar. Oh, we've come a long way, baby, right? As the feminist movement would say in the 70s, but we don't need to go any further. That's almost exactly what Karl Marx said in the first few paragraphs of the Communist Manifesto. Well, yeah, the Industrial Revolution is good. We've got to stop it now. Don't need any more. Oh, okay. So what you've got is good. Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. But no more for future generations. Nah, we'll stop it right here. I think this is pretty good. Yeah, that's what this woman's saying. Yeah, we've done okay with truth so far. But, you know, really, it's not going to serve us for the future. No more of this competition stuff and comparing things and having our own decisions and then seeing how it comports to reality. We'll just have top down, top of the pyramid.
The search for the truth has led us to do great things, to learn great things.
But that's all yesterday.
But not for you.
Wait a minute. But.
Yeah.
Did you hear there's a but?
Yeah, you're not an expert. Is that going
to be it? Wait a minute. I want to really listen to this. This may be the most powerful but I've ever heard in my life. This is bigger than Bertha Butt, one of the Butt sisters.
Things, to learn great things. But I think if I were to really ask you to think about this, one of the things that we could all acknowledge is that part of the reason we have such glorious chronicles to the human experience in all forms.
It's just her language is insufferable, isn't it? Glorious chronicles to the human experience. I mean, it is NPR. No wonder she went to work for NPR. It's like every 5 o'clock news thing at NPR. This is exactly what it is. Oh, man. And they don't know how cliched and tiresome this they sound, how hackneyed this whole approach is. I mean, all my life, I've heard that approach from the so-called sophisticates, from the real sophists. And I'm not talking about the ancient sophists, from the people who pretend to be intellectuals and they try to use the right lingua. Again, it's the lingua non lingua. We'll continue.
Culture is because we acknowledge there are many different truths. What? And so in the spirit of that.
No, we don't.
No, there aren't many different truths.
Many different. What do you mean? Like religions?
Right. If you're writing a book about religions, that would be okay.
Well, she has a degree in Islamic studies also.
You're doing journalism.
So this is a religion for me now. You're NPR.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I'm certain that the truth exists for you.
All right. Now I want to pause it right there. I'm doing a lot of pauses. There's plenty more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
It's Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Let's start talking about the rhetoric that's being thrown at Tucker Carlson and questions that are being asked that don't seem to me to be really pertinent. Like, why did it take so long to get this Ukraine bill? The Ukraine bill passed in the House and the Senate. Why did it get so long to get this money out and weapons out to Israel? You know, what's wrong? Why did it take so long to get this? You didn't mention the Constitution. No, you just asked, why did it take so long to do this? You're completely unaware or don't care about the Constitution, Mr. Reporter Man. Mitch McConnell is making news now because, like Ben Shapiro, he's being highly critical of Tucker Carlson. Ben Shapiro is being critical of Tucker Carlson because Tucker Carlson cited Ben Shapiro for being cold and callous and saying that it was a good thing that the United States dropped 2 atomic bombs and killed tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of civilians, right? Yeah, in Japan over the years. Who knows how many really died from radiation and things like that, sicknesses. But Tucker Carlson, in an interview with, I believe it was Joe Rogan, said, you know, I can't even believe that I used to have that position. It's so utterly immoral. Yeah, good for Tucker Carlson. Good job, man, you know. Well, Mitch McConnell, who never saw any shred of morality that he wouldn't turn away from like a vampire, here we see Mitch McConnell attacking Tucker Carlson and blaming him because Tucker had the temerity to actually do an interview with, you know, Vladimir Putin, the guy that the United States has been lying to since the fall of the Berlin Wall.
What took so long to get some of these other eight Republicans persuaded to your position here? Was it the overall nature of this bill and what was lost in that time period for Ukraine?
Well, that's a good question. You already know the answer. I think the demonization of Ukraine began by Tucker Carlson, who, in my opinion, ended up where he should have been all along, which is interviewing Vladimir Putin. And so he had an enormous audience, which convinced a lot of rank-and-file Republicans that maybe this was a mistake. I think the former president had sort of mixed views on it. We all felt that border was a complete disaster, myself included. And Chad, you remember covering the phases we went through. First, there was an effort to make law, which requires you to deal with Democrats. And then a number of our members thought it wasn't good enough. And then our nominee for president didn't seem to want us to do anything at all. That took months.
Okay, so
to work our way through it. So we ended up
pause that if the system will respond. Thank you for responding. Okay, so first he said, and some of our members didn't think that was good enough. No, the reason you're not, see, these are people like MTG. And again, I don't agree with them that the federal government has anything to do with immigration unless a state, according to the Constitution, asks the federal government to come in and help them to maintain their constitutional system, okay, their Republican system. But I will point out to Mitch McConnell that he isn't exactly playing honest there, because the members of his group that disapproved of it recognized that Speaker Johnson was not doing anything to actually really fund stuff. He kept putting stuff off. He kept trying to use it as his bargaining chip to say, I'll include this if you go with this. He tried everything he could under the sun to continue with the this being weapons and funding for Ukraine and Israel. That's it. That's why they didn't like it. I don't agree that the federal government should be involved at all. But to play that loose with the actual facts about how things went along just, again, shows what a disastrous, perfidious person Mr. McConnell is. To say that sort of thing and then claim that Tucker Carlson is at fault because too many Americans heard Tucker Carlson. You mean they got information from him? Implying what? Implying that they got Russian propaganda again, right? Amazing. Just amazing. Here we go.
And the supplemental that was originally proposed, which dealt with not all problems, it didn't solve the border problem, but certainly addressed the growing threats at the moment.
Okay, again, there you go. He's like, so what do you think the problem was? Well, you know, I blame it on Tucker Carlson, but, you know, maybe towards the end here, I'll admit that it didn't include what actually everybody wanted included there, and that might have been the problem. And so, therefore, something else I'm not mentioning, the speaker worked with Democrats because they don't want the immigration stuff. Thanks for that great answer there, Mitch. That's fantastic. Glad you have such an awesome memory, right? Just insufferable. Well, let's just go into some of the real information on this and just mention, everybody, that Mitch McConnell's claim that Tucker Carlson is somehow at fault is, again, one of these attacks on freedom of speech. That's one of the things they don't like. Says, oh, my, he might as well have been going, of course, he just went to Russia where he belongs. Seriously. Okay, so again, what we're seeing here is Mitch McConnell buying into essentially the same sort of stuff that was thrown at Donald Trump by the deep staters and the Democrats, rhinos and Democrats. And Mitch McConnell, and now you can see probably behind the scenes, he was one of those deep staters who had no problem with Donald Trump being portrayed as a Russian bot, as a guy who was purchased by the Russians, you might say, bought by the Russians. Now, I'm not defending Donald Trump in any way. The guy committed so many grievous acts when he was president. He is obviously not deserving to be in that office according to what the Constitution stipulates and according to any moral legitimacy. It's just not right. Joe Biden, also an evil, evil person. you know? But I will say that the charges of him being influenced by the Russians and getting help by the Russians are just absurd. They're absolutely absurd. And Mitch McConnell didn't raise a finger about that. And now he's trying to use this very same argument that was used on Donald Trump to try to portray just a simple conversation that Tucker Carlson had, and people could have judged it the way they want to and look it up. And they found, wow, what a surprise. First, he's distracting people from the real problem, which is that most people didn't care about that interview with Tucker Carlson. That wasn't the real reason that they opposed this. The real reason they opposed it was, A, they wanted that stuff for the immigration border issue and they didn't get it. B, they realized that Speaker Johnson was using that as leverage and just continually gunning for the stuff he wanted, which was C, what they didn't want. More money going to Ukraine, and now a very contentious issue, finally, after the first, oh, I don't know, say 100 days or so of the media constantly banging the drum for Israel, then realizing that they had to maybe tone it down a little bit because there were so many innocent people being slaughtered, but the politicians still doing it. And of course, many universities portraying as anti-Semitic people who are just asking for a ceasefire. A lot of Americans started to see the footage in Israel, and they didn't want more billions of dollars coming from the bankrupt United States and impoverishing their kids to send more weapons to kill kids in Israel. Those were the matters. It wasn't this distraction of, well, yeah, him intimating that he blames Tucker Carlson for interviewing Vladimir Putin. But even if it were, then what he's implying is what they saw changed their minds on the Ukraine thing. Which implies what? He's implying that somehow it was incorrect information, that somehow it was propaganda. Well, you have to prove that what Vladimir Putin said was not correct, because it was correct. He went through the history of it. He was 100% spot on, just as he was the day before he initiated the announcement of the invasion in 2022, or when he announced the invasion, the day before they acted on his words. Everything he cited about the James Baker Agreement, the Minsk Accord, the expansion towards the former Iron Curtain nations, all of it was 100% right during his pre-invasion speech. And the information he gave to Tucker Carlson going way back about the history of Ukraine was correct. And at first you could see Tucker Carlson was sort of befuddled by it all. Like, why are we going so back in history, so far back? Well, you could see as it went along, Tucker Carlson started to absorb that information. And he said, oh, okay, I understand. Now, if Mitch McConnell wants to blame this problem of it taking longer to pass an unconstitutional package of funding other countries and giving them weapons to kill people, if he wants to blame that on Tucker Carlson, Tucker Carlson should probably say, oh, well, I must have done a good job. I gave people the truth. If he wants to imply that it's not the truth, then he has to prove that it's not the truth. He has to show some sort of alternative evidence or truth that we can verify. But he doesn't do that. He just broad brushes Tucker Carlson and the very concept of free speech. So let's take an opportunity now, actually, everybody, to do this. Let's talk a little bit about freedom of speech. And for that, of course, we're going to turn to the psych. Again, if you're just listening, folks, this is a song called Entertain Me. It is from their album Book of Days, which came out after they had a short period of pop success, and they got rid of that success. They said, no, we don't want this. We're doing what we want to do. And it was intense.
Speak, talk to me, show what I am and cannot be. Talk, entertain me.
All right. So can you speak on college campuses without being called anti-Semitic, without being called an invader? Well, let's start things off by going back to my, yeah, let's do this. Let's go back to my citation of this guy named Shia Davidi. And he's a professor at Columbia, of all things. And he was very upset about the protesters at Columbia. And it just so happens that the state propaganda X feed of Israel saw what he had to post. I saw what he had to post. And I said, check out our Liberty Conspiracy Short Class 9. This is from the other night from this show here live. It's a look at hypocrisy, occupation, government throwing all of us together to argue as it uses our cash to fund genocide, and how critics of sit-ins regarding Israel-Gaza don't seem to notice their own double standards. So here we go. And Max Blumenthal makes this point about Israel. The state of Israel is meddling directly in U.S. politics, promoting a call for the U.S. National Guard to attack and repress student protesters at Columbia University and demonizing those American students as terrorists. Biden has taken the side of the Israeli state against Americans, denouncing the Columbia University protest and accusing the students of blatant anti-Semitism. So here we see. This is from the state of Israel. They're showing protesters. Terrorism, they're equating with it. They are openly supporting terror. Really? You mean the terror of what? The Israeli state continuing to occupy a land called Palestine or the Palestinians, their homes, to crush them, turn them to powder, kill babies and children, starve them, shoot people at food tents, shoot people in food convoys? And says Israel, the protesters are terrorists. Let's blow that up a little bit bigger so you can see their great wisdom. And then there's this. Shai Davidi says, this is what's happening at Columbia right now. I know it's confusing, so let me spell it out for you. Terrorism is an ideology. They are openly supporting terror. They are terrorists. Terrorists have taken over Columbia University. The government needs to take over Columbia. Oh, so again, I ask the question. I guess you don't like it when some outside force comes and occupies a place. Just leave that hanging. All right, there you go. So that's for you, Shy. Isn't that great? Hush, hush. Too shy, shy, hush, hush, eye to eye. Yeah, so obviously that's a big deal. And that man is pretty well known. I didn't even realize it. Well, guess what? He's in the news again, everybody. Why? Because, of course, he's exposed himself as a massive hypocrite. Why? Because in some of his ex pronouncements, he's been calling for the government to come in. Not only is he a hypocrite regarding occupation, because he doesn't even recognize that he's upset that these people are occupying this land at NYU, but he's not upset that the Israelis are occupying literally what they call the occupied territories, right? No problem. No problem whatsoever, right? But and tomorrow we're going to go into a great presentation from Kim Iverson about the history there, showing that the Jews, even if they're not considered the Ashkenazi Jews, the Jews weren't the original people who lived there in the Palestinian region from back in biblical days. So we'll talk about that. She talks about where Abraham came from. Very interesting stuff. So even, and it's not really relevant to the fact that an aggressor force came in 1947 and took land, and it has been encroaching on people ever since then, corralling people, innocent people, starving them, keeping water, controlling electricity, and keeping them inside that area that they've been encroaching on decade after decade, holding innocent people by the hundreds in Israel without any trial whatsoever. Yes, those would be called kidnapped victims. And of course, if you use the same logic that Israel could just go and slaughter all sorts of innocent innocent Palestinians to try to get at Hamas and rescue their hostages. Well, then the people in Palestine could do the same thing and say, we're going to make excursions, aggressive excursions into Israel whenever we want to try to rescue the people that the Israeli government has kidnapped. It goes both ways, right? Of course, people like Shai Davidi don't think that, evidently. I'm just going on evidence here. I'm sorry, NPR head. I'm just going on what I think is verified by what I see out there in the world. Maybe it's my truth, but I'm offering it out there for people to verify and we can check on this. You know, evidently you don't like people doing that. So this guy is a hypocrite because not only is he upset about the occupation in New York, he wants the police. He wants the government to come in and get rid of the people, right? Okay, so maybe he thinks the Israeli government can come in and just occupy that land. Maybe that's what he thinks. He just doesn't like the kinds of people who are occupying it. It's got to be pro-Zionist people, evidently. But this guy has been exposed in another way to get it right up to you. He formerly was an outspoken person for defund the police. He was a big gunner for defunding the police. Now, I am an anarchist. I don't think there should be state funding that takes from a neighbor to fund the police. That guy's not an anarchist. That guy supports states like the state of Israel. No state is legitimate. Then he says that the occupation is somehow legitimate in Israel, but the occupation at NYU is not legitimate. And then he makes it even worse by going backtracking on what he said about police before, which is defund the police. As most everybody knew, the vast majority of the people who were defund the police, we could probably adjudge, were, like many of the so-called anti-war hippies, not actually opposed to police or not actually opposed to war. They were just opposed to the people in charge of the police or the people in charge of the wars, and they wanted to get in charge of the wars, which is exactly what happened when Bill Clinton entered office. You can ask the people in Kosovo about that. Or you can ask the people in aspirin plants in Africa, right? In the Sudan, right? You can ask all those people. You can ask, oh, I don't know, the people in Waco, Texas at the branch. Oh, no, you can't ask any of them because they're all dead because of him. I forgot about that. A lot of people are dead because of him. You could ask the Iraqis, too, but a million of them died. Even 500,000 more died after the interview with Madeleine Albright on 60 Minutes, where she said, well, we think it was worth it. Unbelievable. So that's Mr. Shai Davidi, right? Wanted to give you that update as well. But in addition to that, let me just double check on this. I got a ton of notes here. Now I want to go to the Ron Paul Liberty Report and Daniel McAdams and Ron. So before we do anything else, and we're going to have a good update from anti-war as well, but let me go over to Ron Paul and Danny McAdams. Now, this is all about freedom of speech, portraying people as bad guys. And of course, what's really going on is the bad guys are the ones who assume they can take your money. I don't see Tucker Carlson doing that. He's not with Fox anymore. I'm giving the guy the benefit of the doubt. I don't like some of the people he's interviewed. I don't understand some of them, but some of the stuff is okay. So I say, okay, I take it bits and pieces. People who are consistently excellent, of course, are out there. Many of them are out there. And I don't mean like bizarrely out there, but they are available. And they come from places like this, the Ron Paul Liberty Report. Here's Danny McAdams and Ron Paul talking about this and Mitch McConnell's statements and just the unbelievable way that Mitch McConnell tries to claim that Americans who don't support getting ripped off this way are somehow being misled by those evil Russian flacks like Tucker Carlson.
What McConnell is saying is it's all Tucker's fault because Tucker Carlson reported on corruption in Ukraine, and that turned Republicans against giving them even more money. As if somehow he was falsely reporting, he was spreading false rumors of corruption in Ukraine, where in fact everybody knows, everyone who's not Mitch McConnell, I suppose, knows that Ukraine is notorious. And in fact, even the U.S. administration put on this next clip. I did a second of research on this. It's not a deep dive here. This is from Politico, I think earlier this year. Leaked U.S. strategy on Ukraine sees corruption as the real threat. And go to the next one. This is the Biden administration itself. Biden administration officials are far more worried about corruption in Ukraine than they publicly admit. Mitch McConnell basically is what he's saying is everyone was in favor of sending more military aid to Ukraine. Everybody in this country until that dirty Tucker Carlson started talking about not sending money to Ukraine. Well, the fact of the matter is, and again, here is not a deep dive, an easy dive. This is from April 15th, just a week ago. Put this on. Most Republicans oppose U.S. aid to Ukraine. Most Republicans oppose it. Go to the next one. This is that same report. Most self-identified Republicans oppose further U.S. aid for Ukraine. And more than three quarters trust former President Donald Trump above all government and media sources to inform them. A CBS News YouGov survey released Sunday, just this past Sunday, found that 61% of Republicans say the U.S. should not send more weapons and other military assistance to Vladimir Zelensky.
There's a lot more coming up. It's Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
We continue with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Remember, check out Liberty Conspiracy every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on Rumble, Rockfin, on YouTube now, as long as they allow us to stay there for a little while, and also on my ex, at Guard Goldsmith. You can also check out my Substack. That is the Gardner Goldsmith Substack. And I welcome you to leave comments on any of the posts. You can also sign up for the podcast for our live program, which usually comes out a few hours after the live show finishes. Thanks so much for backing Freedom, everybody. Let's continue with the program. TikTok in the news. So let's get right to this. All right. United States signs TikTok ban, according to this headline. In other words, United States president, U.S. government, the U.S. president signs the TikTok ban legislation to force the sale. But TikTok is going to sue. Now, where in anything, any semblance of even a hint, a whiff of smoke of the burning Constitution, the smoke from a distant fire, can somebody say that the federal government can command that TikTok must sell itself? You know, I often talk about diktats and things like that. There's a new diktat from New York City that they want to force restaurants, or they want to force people to have to, if they're paying with a credit card, to have to include on an app, I should say, apps will have to include a gratuity for all deliveries or any sort of restaurant in New York City. That's a proposal in New York City. Now, again, on a moral side of it, who are you? If you don't like it, start your own business, right? If you don't like it, just start your own business. But this TikTok thing is blown up even bigger, because not only do they not want to start another business, they want to literally force this business to either close or sell. Imagine if you had someone in your neighborhood telling you how to operate that way. The long-discussed TikTok ban just took a big legal step towards becoming a reality. It also took a big step towards a courtroom. The recently passed bipartisan national security bill signed into law by President Biden, signed into operational executable statute, not real law, included legislation forcing TikTok owner ByteDance to sell the social media platform lest it be banned in the U.S. entirely. But don't worry about losing access to the site's videos just yet. The company says it will go to court to have the law overturned. The recent $95 billion national security bill, so-called, how do they, anyway, I mean, you must know where my mind's going. How do they even think that it's called national security? It's all taking flesh out of you and sending weapons to kill other people overseas. That provided funds and weapons to Ukraine and weapons to Israel and funds and weapons to Taiwan also included a piece of legislation called Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act. The portion of the bill prohibits distributing, maintaining, or providing internet hosting services for a foreign adversary controlled application. If there were any questions who this bill is specifically targeting, it only cites TikTok and ByteDance by name. Despite only a small amount of evidence the Chinese-based ByteDance has ever done so, officials believe the company is following a Chinese law that requires TikTok to share private user data with the Chinese government. Oh, sort of like what the United States government does with FISA that they just renewed. Sort of like what the U.S. government has been doing since Edward Snowden revealed that the NSA was taking people's data without any warrant. They have been paying people to do that, incentivizing in a fascist way, just the fascist form of collectivism. Well, TikTok has to be sold by ByteDance, or it will be officially banned by the United States. President Biden can extend them 30 more days to find a buyer. They have 9 months to do it, and then 30 days. ByteDance has said it intends to sue the government from forcing its sale or from banning it. It's just unbelievable. Let's now look at a few other things that are going on as far as freedom of speech is concerned. Let's look at some of those protests and let's see what's going on as far as the politicians and their rhetoric to portray people as evil. Tucker Carlson's a Russian asset. The people who are asking for peace, the vast majority of them, somehow they're anti-Semitic and calling for the end of Israel, which is false. And here is Judge Napolitano with the great Aaron Maté, both of them talking about this right off the bat on his Judging Freedom program today.
You and I live in the New York City metropolitan area, and we are familiar with what's going on at the Columbia University. If I were on the law school faculty, I'd be marching with the students. What's your take?
I'm just very heartened by the courage and the moral leadership from these brave young people setting up these encampments, not only at Columbia, but at many other schools. Harvard just recently became the latest, I believe. And this is, you know, exam season for students. They have a lot going on, but they're just so outraged at the genocide being waged in their name, but they're doing something about it. And they're recalling the best traditions of this country. You know, college campuses were the source for so much anti-war protest during the Vietnam War and many subsequent foreign disasters and foreign conflicts. So it's just so heartening and encouraging to see young people carrying on in that tradition against really serious intimidation. At Columbia, you have now police assembling and the threat of a raid to break up the encampment. At NYU, you saw police come in and arrest people and then literally construct a wall, or an apartheid wall, you might call it, to keep students out. And not only are they facing physical threats, but also, you know, in the media being demonized as anti-Semites. There's a huge propaganda campaign right now being pushed by establishment members of both political parties to portray these protests as anti-Semitic. Joe Biden said it. Senator Tom Cotton said it. Senator Tom Cotton said people who are foreigners taking part in these protests should be deported. So there's a huge consensus right now from the establishment to demonize these young people, but they're not being intimidated. And I'm just very encouraged by that.
Senator Tom Cotton even encouraged having fistfights. It seems to me the whole purpose of government, I'm going back to the Declaration of Independence, is to protect the exercise of our rights, foremost among which is the freedom of speech. Without that right, we'd all have British accents. We would never have had the American Revolution. Well, here's what Prime Minister Netanyahu said about 2 hours ago. It's a video tweet, a video X, call it today. It's about 2 minutes long. It's horrific. I want everybody to watch the whole thing.
All right, check this out, everybody. Watch this. And by the way, we'll get into the problems of the tragedy of the commons where NYU, Columbia, all of these get federal funds, or they are sponsored by governments themselves. And of course, then you start to say, well, if the government is going to be putting money in, then everybody's going to have a say, and everybody argues about how the land is going to be used. But let's look directly at this unbelievable, absolutely genocidal maniac.
What's happening on America's college campuses?
Hope that's loud enough.
Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities.
I'll read it for you because they have. It is very quiet. He says, what's happening on America's college campuses? Anti-Semitic forces have taken over campuses. What's happening is horrific. Anti-Semitic forces, they attack Jewish faculty. Let me just go back a second. Here you go.
is horrific. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities.
Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities. They call for the annihilation of Israel, says Netanyahu. And I'm not translating. It's just really low sound, low audio.
Of Israel. They attack Jews.
They attack Jewish students. So there have been occasional fistfights, people who have gone and infiltrated. As Max Blumenthal said, there is actually an advertisement for Jewish students who look like they could be Palestinian from the Middle East going in and dressing up as if they're Palestinian. You know, obviously, agent provocateurs will continue. And that's not to excuse real things if they do happen. But this, again, is a manifestation of something that none of us should be arguing about as far as having control over our neighbor's wallet. Why should I be able to say, well, I won the argument, now you got to send your money over to Israel to bomb people? I can't do that. That's not right. The very essence of it is incorrect, and it leads to all these people arguing. Now, people could be protesting and have no monetary vested interest in no interest that's been forced upon them. That would be a different story. But right now, the United States government is sending over tens of billions of dollars there and $61 billion to Ukraine.
Jewish students, they attack Jewish faculty.
He says they attack Jewish faculty.
This is reminiscent of what happened in German universities.
This is reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s. Again, equating it to the Holocaust, which it is not, because I don't recall in the German history books the German government and the problems that it created in its hyperinflation and then the genocide and the terrible attacks on private property and lives. I don't recall them being similar to the Palestinian people living in land that had been theirs for generations, even going back prior to Abraham. And strangely, an arbitrary state of European Jews coming in and moving there and then using violence to take over more and more land. I don't know. There's something kind of strange about trying to equate this disruption in the United States and upset that maybe my tax money is being used to fund the aggressors as being somehow this protest against aggression as being somehow reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s. But, you know, I guess if they can try to portray it and try to bring up memories of the Holocaust in any way they can, that provides them that extra cover. I don't know. I used to see that a lot at BU. If you were critical of the Zionist state, then obviously you were excusing anti-Semitism and you were against Jewish people. And somehow you were implying that you were in favor of what happened in Germany in the 1930s. It all led from one to the other. And that, I'm telling you, I saw this in the 80s over and over and over again at Boston University.
In the 1930s. It's unconscionable.
It's unconscionable. It has to be stopped, he says. It has to be condemned and condemned unequivocally. But that's not what happened. The response of several university presidents was shameful. Oh, I see. So maybe they're not going to get a lot of that funding they've been getting. Maybe the anti-Semitism group will come against them, huh? Shake them down a little bit. That'll work, huh? Yeah.
Several university presidents was shameful. Now, fortunately,
he says, state, local, federal officials, many of them have responded differently, but there has to be more. More has to be done. It has to be done not only because they attack Israel. That's bad enough. Not only because they want to kill Jews wherever they are. I'll just read it. Wherever they are. That's bad enough. It's also when you listen to them. It's also because they say not only death to Israel, death to the Jews, but death to America. And this tells us that there is an anti-Semitic surge here that has terrible consequences. We see this exponential rise of anti-Semitism throughout America and throughout Western societies as Israel tries to defend itself against genocidal terrorists who hide behind civilians. Yet it is Israel that is falsely accused of genocide, Israel that is falsely accused of starvation and all sundry war crimes. But all one big libel. But that's not new. We've seen in history that anti-Semitic attacks were always preceded by vilification and slander, lies that were cast against the Jewish people that are unbelievable, yet people believe them. And what is important now is for all of us who are interested and cherish our values and our civilization, to stand up together and to say enough is enough. And have to stop. We have to stop anti-Semitism, because anti-Semitism is the canary in the coal mine. It precedes larger conflagrations that engulf the entire world. So I ask of you, Jews and non-Jews alike, who are concerned with our common future, our common values, to do one thing: stand up, speak up, be counted. Stop anti-Semitism now. Okay, well, that's interesting, isn't it? So, a lot of things that he offers there that are completely untrue. And of course, let's go back to the judge.
Where to start with this, Aaron?
There's so many lies in there. Just starting with the notion that somehow these protests are anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish. There are so many Jewish students taking part in these protests. At Columbia, you can see images of people doing Jewish ceremonies. It's Passover right now. They've been honoring that. On the Sabbath, they honored that as well. But, you know, even if there weren't a single Jewish person there, a Jewish person of conscience taking part in these protests, even if there weren't, still the claim of anti-Semitism would be just as ridiculous. Because what are these people actually there for? They're there to protest mass murder, the industrial slaughter of children in Gaza. That's what everyone is opposed to. And the fact that Netanyahu feels compelled to make a video slandering them and urging action against them, it speaks to how dependent he is on U.S. support and how fragile his entire operation is, because he knows what he sees in those protests is moral leadership, which threatens his genocide campaign. He's worried
about. Now, pause it right there, because I'd like to add this. When he says, you know, they claim genocide, all you need to do is not only, you don't even have to go back to the origination of the contemporary Jewish state. All you have to do is look at a map and see which state surrounds which people and the encroachment of that state to know there's a bit of a problem with what Netanyahu is saying. Then you can look even further at it and you can see that the people in Palestine were led politically by a group that he himself openly stated he wanted to support, because they would be oppositional and wouldn't negotiate and would allow for further kinetic confrontations that then would allow the more powerful Israelis, fed by the United States to the tune of $3.8 billion a year over a decade and beyond that, they got money even beyond that, they would be able to take over more and more land. It was all part of his plan. And now he's trying to dodge claims of genocide when he himself used the phrase from the river to the sea. When people in his own party, in the Knesset and in the IDF, openly stated that they want to sweep those people away. They don't want the young people to live because they say that they will grow up to be new Hamas. They have targeted civilians in buildings. They don't know whether Hamas is there. They've been using AI that can kill innocent people. They haven't been allowing food in. They haven't had the people in Palestine haven't had good water there since I cited a piece from 2018. And he says these things are lies. This is the battle before us for the ability to be able to check information and see what is true or not true, to actually see things if we want to see things, if we want to share information and not be crowned with a dunce cap and claim that we're deluded because we actually investigated and found information that they didn't want us to see. They constantly tell us, well, you know, people who look at information nowadays, you know, the more exposed they are to information, the more false information they get. And then you actually look at what they're citing as false information and you realize, oh, no, that was the real information about COVID or the masks or the PCR tests, whatever, right? Oh, that was the real information. I see now. It is who is in control. Now I want to give you a little bit more from Max Blumenthal and Aaron. And Aaron Mate is Jewish, by the way, and so is Max. So here's Max and Aaron from the Gray Zone today.
kind of Gaza encampment in the middle of campus in Morningside Heights in New York City, media center of the world. And the protests have spread all across the country, all the way to Cal Polytechnic on the West Coast. Campuses across the country are starting these kind of occupations or autonomous zones. And what they're doing is challenging the investment of major American universities in merchants of death like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, as well as other companies that are involved in the genocidal slaughter of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
And that's the key right there. That's what I wanted to make sure I got out to you. And I wasn't just going to say it I heard this somewhere. I wanted to make sure that I showed you Max Blumenthal and Aaron Monte are bringing up a very, very important point. A lot of these politicians are very upset beyond what they normally would be upset for two reasons, or they're showing this upset more. They're playing it up, I think, for three reasons. First, they're backed by many Israeli donors. Second, they're backed by many of these corporations that have massive amounts of investment and stock holdings from these universities. So if you can look back at the anti-apartheid days with South Africa, there was that big move to divest. And various universities had a lot of people protesting to say, divest, pull your investments out of these things. They have a lot of leverage, right? And this is very important to bring up because the politicians like Mitch McConnell and Cotton and those people, Lindsey Graham, they are very well aware of the way the system really works, the way those universities get their funds from the federal government, the way they have their investments in many of these giant corporations. They have big time interests. They don't want people standing up the way they stood up on campuses to protest Vietnam. And yet you got a guy like Shai Davidi saying, call in the cops, call in the troopers, call in the National Guard, not even realizing as he's saying it that it has echoes of Kent State. This guy who says that he's the one who's defending the right side, the occupying force. And then he doesn't even recognize that for some reason he's upset at an occupying force that's hanging out with tents on some grass in New York and protesting the war state.
Militarism in general, it relates directly to what we're going to discuss later about the $95 billion aid package that is basically a down payment on conflicts, not just in the Middle East and Eastern Europe, but in the Asia-Pacific theater for a generation. And they're challenging the American university and the hypocrisy of the liberalism espoused by American university administrators, like Columbia president Manoush Shafiq, a trustee of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and exposing the contradictions. And they've consequently provoked the inevitable Zionist freakout, comparing what's happening there to the second coming of the Holocaust.
And that's exactly what we just saw. The head of Israel of the before he is possibly thrown into prison, Netanyahu doing. Now, with that stated, I think we're very fortunate that we can communicate with each other this way. So I want to go into Rockfin and Rumble. Rockfin and YouTube. And I'm going to be heading to Australia in a minute to talk about the X conflict there, which is sort of a parallel to what's been going on in Brazil with X. And I want to note that if you are in YouTube, you can leave your comments. And also over in YouTube, I know my friend Tim from Australia is there. Tim, I see what you have written because I appreciate you getting my message earlier. Folks, Tim is in Australia, and I'd love to get his opinion on free speech there. I also sent a message to Harps. And Tim, if you're watching right now and you go into your X feed, if you go into your X messages, I sent you the link for the show. When I saw that you had the opportunity, you say you have a good spot. If you are hearing this and you want to come on to talk about the Australia issue, I want to open this invite tonight, tomorrow night, any night that you're free, if you want to come in. And if you're hearing this now on the fly, hop in, buddy. It would be great to talk to you from Queensland and get your thoughts on this controversy over free speech and the video of the knife attack that they're trying to now lever into further attacks on free speech, the way that New Zealand Christchurch attack was used. And in fact, the former prime minister of New Zealand is now the head of the Christchurch Initiative, which is a worldwide global attempt to try to censor the internet. And we'll talk about that some other time. But just to let you know, this is a parallel. They don't want this video being shown. They're going after X. We'll go to Australia and free speech in a little while. And if Tim can join us from Australia, that would be great. Harps, if you're watching or listening and you'd like to join us, I can send you the link as well over on Twitter. And the invite is open tonight if it works, or any night if it works. We'll work things around. I also wanted to mention some excellent comments by Birdhouse Blues. Birdhouse Blues says they've already made participation trophies for Ukraine. Just end it, Zelensky, and pass out the awards. This is Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Thanks so much for listening, everyone.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations, and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.